Is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good evening, everyone. Here from Finland, after I guess what we could call a marathon new group of world servers celebration. We had some wonderful people here in the group, and they were here while we were attempting to broadcast and webinar to you, and I know some of you were able to join us. We're very grateful about that. We had a lot going, and I suppose Tuya tells me over 30 events during that week. And now I'd like to be able to say that things have died down just a little bit, but I don't think I can justifiably say that. We're not going to have a really long session tonight, but I wanted to get started again because, as you know, a week comes when we have to go to a conference, which has its own ongoing demands. So, you know, to keep going here for a while and see if we can slip into that state of, I guess I could only call it at this point, realization. But obviously on some high level, it's got to be called identification. And matter of fact, I have some words here. And I'd like to just see what you think about these words from your pondering, you know, what your definitions are. We have here, and welcome to you, Anne and Annette and Antoinette and Dan and Joe and Lori and Mariut, Tia and Anne Veronica. And I suppose others will join us. And then on the other side, Michael, Stacy, and Tuya are giving me a hand, and some person called Sony Infinitize, which is me on another computer. So anyway, let's just first, before I ask you these definitions, and it's okay, you know, whatever you say, we'll just try to get to the point where we can talk about these words and what they represent so that they're part of our vocabulary. There's not so many words that are very important in this study, and yet there are some that are very important. And I guess I just have to add this one word, identification. Now, I don't anticipate necessarily that we will get through all of these. And because we have a guest, a lot of you know Alexander Ilchuk, and he's arriving from Moscow pretty much quite soon. Tuya is going to pick him up, and he'll be here for a short time. And he's involved, as you know, in the 2025 initiative. So the groups that are actively pursuing the depths of these esoteric processes are connecting up with each other, not only electronically, but in person. We're grateful for his visits. So it'll be a little bit shorter, time that we're together, but sufficient. Now I'm going to pick words out of here when I get the chance. And And I'm interested in your thought as to what it is. Now, don't be too subdued. You're okay. You know, anybody who tries to go after some of these words, it's just a lot. So I see I had that word already present. And let's just pause for a little while, looking at our big map, and just think about just something simple, you know, it's simple, apparently simple anyway. Just think about the one life. Why do we refer to the one life, and why does DK tell us that when it comes to life, we really don't know much at all, just like when it comes to trying to define the will? What is this one life, really? And where does it come from? Does it even have an origin? Or was it simply always so? You know, there's quite a long distance, apparently, between considerations about the one life and all the little fragments that we have to deal with in our daily life. We're not talking about the number one at all. We're talking about the many, engagement with multiplicity, so much so that we don't really withdraw ourselves and realize, goodness, I'm dealing all the time with multiplicity, and yet it is said that there is only the one, and that I am that one. How did this happen? And I would just say that the law of apparent self-division, you know, there is no such law, obviously, when it comes to the kinds of laws we study, but that is what we're dealing with, a kind of a recurring, apparent self-division has been going on forever. And so when you confront anything, if we could go deep enough in that relationship, we are simply meeting the one self which we are. And it may take a while for us to realize that, because we think of ourselves as being a member of the fourth kingdom, so that when we perceive the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, it's hard to somehow say that this perception is the same as what we are. As a matter of fact, it's, you know, it would be considered foolish. It would be considered by most not to make sense. But if you go deep enough into occultism, you find out there are these deeper strata of realization. So it's a parallel curriculum we are pursuing. Now, in the future, many of us, maybe all of us, who knows, will be involved in the new schools of meditation. They call them that, you know, the new esoteric schools, supervised by a master and at least at a distance, and really training for the hierarchical life. And maybe that will take more than one life to fit us to really be representatives of the externalizing spiritual hierarchy of the planet. Maybe that's the future for many of us. And our accumulated abilities will be utilized at those times, and we will give everything we can give. Even now, we try to give everything we can give. The whole solar system and local cosmos and galaxy and even cosmos is set up on the principle of giving proportionately according to the need of the lesser aspects of the oneself, which we are. So every day, even for a few minutes, let us remind ourselves of what the one self really is, as close as we can get to it. You may just have to sit quietly in your meditation and find the best way to remind yourself. I mean, obviously we continue with our daily activities and there's no escape here. As a matter of fact, it's more an entry into responsible living than it is any opportunity for escape. But at length, this triadal consciousness that the masters possess will be ours, and at length, the monadic consciousness which the Chohans possess will be ours, and on it will go. We have made the turn, and the higher states of inclusive consciousness will be added to us again, plus all that we have seen and all that we have learned. It takes a huge patience at a time when DK is telling us to be organizing for speed. And can we, as Moria would say, contain the contradiction? To have that kind of great patience when it comes to consciousness and what it reveals, and yet in the world of action, to organize for speed. So let's just sound the om and confirm a little bit that this is one of our pursuits, this parallel curriculum which deals with reality more than multiplicity per se. I'd like to be able to sing a slightly longer om here, but cannot quite manage it at the moment. All right, now, you know, to get restarted again, because it took from Tuya and me and from many participants a lot to make the presentations of the festival week of the new group of world servers, and you know, sort of a group connected with the Arcane School, and a group in Israel, Hechal, and our group here in Finland, and other groups, I think, in South America. I'm leaving out, of course, I'm not aware of everything, but they were listed, I think, on the Lucis Trust programming that tried to collect and show many of the activities. These groups were all active in their own way and going deeper into the issue of what it means to be a member of the new group of world servers, how they have to be recognized, how they have to be supported, how they have to be strengthened. These are the things we concentrated on. And you know, if you're looking under the new group of world servers, you can pull out a compilation that's about, well, our compilation was 212 pages long. I guess it depends on what font you're using, but we were not using a big one. And obviously, even in a week or two or three or a month or more, there's no way to cover all the excellent material that DK has given us on the emerging world servers. But we, I think, hit some of the high points and helped to plant in the minds of the participants a greater understanding. And Elena Dramcini was here with us too. You know, she has a very solid knowledge of astrology and discipleship and all of that. And it was very helpful. So all of us have different gifts, you know. And it is required that we see each other's gifts rather than dismiss people who operate on a different line than we do. They may be operating much more deeply than we can even fathom. And yet we imagine they don't offer much, which is a huge mistake. So this appreciation of the gifts of others, it's a psychic power, you know? It's a bit like that psychic power called recognizing the need of another. Well, when you recognize the gifts of others too, you're going a long way towards strengthening those gifts. So think about that, and think about the people surrounding you. And when you look at them, find what those soul gifts really are. You may be taken quite by surprise if you are sincere in your search. Now, let's you know, just sort of roll along with this a little bit. And offering either in written form or maybe more quickly in spoken form, your understanding, your definition of these words. I'm not going to necessarily start with the beginning. I'll start with the word identification. And offer what you think it means. Think of a form of words or a definition or something that you can explain a little bit or write down a little bit, because we need to sharpen up our understanding of some fundamental concepts that we will never escape when we're dealing with this issue of the one life. So the first is identification. It's a major word in our pursuit, identification as being. So if you come up with anything, and of course, you know, don't be shy. We're all of us in this situation where we cannot define the way Master DK can define. But we're getting better, and we need a foundation, and we need to be more and more sure of the basis of our work. So identification is the first word, and your sort of definition of that. And of course, I would open that up also to the people who are on the staff, if they are among those who wish to speak. I'm not sure that they can write. I'm not sure how that goes, but at least speak. Identification. Identify, identity. Identification. Okay, so Vera, take the plunge. You're good. And you're on.
Yes, I came with something very, very, very short. To me, identification is example when I say I identify with my soul. So it's I am the soul. I am that. I want to identify with. That's all I can say about that, that I am that.
There's the form of the formula I am is very important in this question of identification. You know, what is the I, and how does it identify itself? What does it seem to be? How does it define itself? The word I am. Now, you know, the three in Leo, I am that, and I am that, and that I am. So those are different levels of identification. And mostly, I would say it's good to have this I am formula as being very important in this whole question of identification. Mostly, a mistake is made. I call it mistaken identity. The I am is not applied. But the ancient formula that you're suggesting here is exactly what is found in the Upanishads, I am that. I am that. And of course, obviously, the words are one thing and the realization is another. So thank you for getting us started. Any other or if you want to say anything else, Vera?
Damien's hand is raised.
Okay, so not right now, Vera, and then Damien. Okay, Damien. You're self-muted.
Hi, there, Michael. Hope you had a good December.
Boy, did I have a December.
A very challenging time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, identification, the only word that keeps coming into my mind, and it's more than a word, but it's wholeness. And okay. It's more of an impression that I get when I look at the word identification. I just get wholeness.
Mm.
And then the other thing that pops into my head about it is isness, all that is.
Yeah.
That's what I'd associate with the identification, without thinking about it.
Those are two powerful words.
Mm-hmm.
Because very powerful, because I think, you know, somehow isness goes to the core of what is revealed in the identification process, and ever greater wholes are revealed. Maybe not the whole of all wholes, but you know, if it's the universe, it's pretty big. Mm-hmm. And then of course to think of the universe, this particular universe or any particular universe, to think of it as an infinitesimal. Mm-hmm. Now that's a big, you know, you really have to do something with your mind when you might think that. But isness is one of those key words, and so is wholeness, we might say. So, you know, the whole thing is here, David, and whomever, you do what works for you.
Yeah, but what I'd actually do when I say wholeness, right, I'd identify that in my head. I don't know where this is coming with, is beyond no barriers, no beginnings, no ends. It's like the start. Well, it wouldn't be the start. That's the wrong word to use. What's been there for all.
Mm.
The start. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, that word. I do. And that's all, you know, it's all the universes that have ever been, and there are countless, and yet always more than that, because there's the reality behind all those universes. Like Aristotle said, it seems like a simple sentence, but then you stop to think about it. He says, infinity cannot be traversed.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And when he says it, well, you know, then the whole question about how we arrived here or anywhere, and whether that can be a linear process or not, immediately comes up for consideration. So let's just say it's a good word, it's an indicative word, and it takes us beyond any bounded perception. And the universe itself is a bounded perception. So, like I say, whatever, you know, I've worked on this stuff now for 25 years almost. Actually, maybe 28 years. The one good Saturn cycle. And I know it's elusive. It slips away.
It's like a niche. You know, for me, right, I know it's there, but I just, you know, you kind of reach and you just can't get there, but you know it's there. It's very difficult to put into words.
Yeah, and then suddenly, you know, there is that flash of something you were reaching for, and you might like to hold on to it, and maybe it'll stay for a while. But maybe not.
But you can't. Anytime I personally do that, it's just, even that feeling goes, like, you know, you can't, for me, I just can't hold on to it. You just kind of have to be in the moment.
Yeah. You know, I've only been to Ireland for a few days of this life. And, but I got some impressions there. My daughter and her family were, I don't know, her husband is Irish, and they were taking, you know, a trip, and it was not possible for Tuya and me to, it was just virtually a weekend. And, but I got some impressions about isness and sameness and, you know, all those good things that we're searching for. And so I have this sort of permanent Iris association, which is not exactly what I thought would be coming up, but there it is. And you know, Damien, maybe you find it possible, if you've anchored the moment in anything recognizable, it's possible to take that recognizable something and re-evoke what went with it. Now, it may not always work, but there may be a scene, a gathering, a person, an object, whatever it is, that can re-evoke. I remember seeing something about time travel. What can I call it? It was a fantasy, and it had Christopher Reeves in it. You know, he had
the actor.
A terrible accident. I think it was called Somewhere in Time or something, and he managed to go back 100 years somehow, and fall in love with somebody that was existing at that time, and everything was fine for him until he saw the head on the side, the Lincoln side of the American penny, you know, made of copper. And it had a later date than his date. And immediately it re-evoked the future, and he was pulled out of his time travel.
He was pulled back, yeah.
Pulled back. So, you know, different things can pull us in, pull us out. And if we can identify the things that help to pull us in, now in my own particular case, this, I kind of call it the Irish configuration. And I kind of involved a few people in my family, and I just see where they were. And there was something about it that was evocative of the thing we're looking for. And occasionally, with some success, I use it, but not always. So, mm-hmm. you know, be aware that there are certain images that can help.
Yeah.
And certain experiences that can help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
And we have a poem that Suzanne penned. And the name of the poem is I. I am the pilgrim's upturned face. I, the angel bleeding grace. Yes, I'm beginning to get that. I am somehow all of it.
It says it, doesn't it, Suzanne? It says it. And thank you for sharing your poetry. It, you know, there's just so many ways in, but maybe none of them is entirely easy, okay? You love the idea of anchoring a moment, and such a wonderful practice, especially if the moment has proven itself to be evocative. Now, I find certain moments linked with my heart center, and I find that I cannot engage in this kind of identification without the heart center open, or, you know, relatively open, involved. And so whatever I'm doing technically, maybe I don't know, but I do know what works sometimes and what doesn't work. And as I feel fairly pragmatic about the whole situation, I'm willing to practice with what works. Now, it's going to be different for each one of us. I'm sure that if I were to look at an evocative image that you might produce or someone else, it might not have the same effect as the image which almost always works for me, and in which I get a resonance in my heart center, which, interestingly enough, DK connects with Buddhi. It's not only the heart and the head. The heart and the head has a monadic connection, as does this very center of the egoic lotus. And you kind of wonder what it is that will take us to the cosmic astral plane. But before we're a bit more like the Christ, maybe we're not going to be answering that. We're just, you know, we're experimenting pragmatically. You and I know that DK has written many words. And some of us have studied those words for years upon years. Now, that's good, and it gives us a framework. But the words are not the thing. It's the meaning, it's the understanding, it's the experience or imperience that the words represent, which are the thing, the thingless thing. And it's that which we want to apprehend. Now, that's quite subtle, and really, you're on your own path when it comes to that. It's like building the Antikarana yourself in your own way, people can give you some hints, but the rest of it is up to you. Thank you, Suzanne. And here, she's right there. Okay, Lori, go ahead.
Hi, Michael. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Lori.
I like what you said, and it really links with what I had written down for, you know, although there's so many different definitions for what is identification. What I wrote down was pure, unobstructed oneness and resonance with the one. And resonance meaning, you know, making an etheric registration of that, like you said, you have had in your heart center, that qualifies it, that validates it, you know?
It makes it seem real to me, you know, real, I guess I can say, beyond words. Yes. Yes, and it's a good definition, Lori. I hope you will actually write that down under the question mark, put it into the chat box, and then maybe Michael can scoop it out of there. Yeah, put it into the question mark. Repeat it, will you please, Lori? That sentence.
Yeah, I said pure, unobstructed oneness and resonance with the one.
Yeah, yeah. And look, unobstructed oneness and resonance with the one takes it to a degree, and it's a high degree. And then what happens when we move beyond resonance with one to being the one? You know what I mean? Resonance is one thing, and being is maybe another. And, you know, like I say, you know, if there were a way to guarantee the apprehension of these things, I would certainly be on it, and I would be offering it. But in a way, there's no way except for you to discover the form of words, the formula, whatever it is that works for you and does the best to convey to others the reality of the situation. But I like very much the words that you used, and as a matter of fact, some really good formulations are coming out of this. Now, you know, we are the part, we are the whole. Realization of our wholeness does not exclude us or absolve us from the responsibilities of our partness. And that's that, a form of the dual life that we have to live, if we can manage it. It's not just the dual life of the disciple. That's important, soul and personality. It's not even the dual life of the normal initiate up to the third degree, or maybe a little beyond. It's the dual life of the high initiate one day. And no, Christ is the greatest of the identifiers. Somehow he's mastered that, and he can get beyond any illusory ring pass knot. He can transcend any illusory ring pass knot. Of course, maybe within reason, because he too is growing in his consciousness. But he sets the way, and at least on the second ray, the 17th chapter of John describing the Christ, describing identification, is a key document. So, you know, we 17th chapter of John, and you know, we'll recognize it the minute we see it. I and thee, and thou and me, and I and them and they, you know, all that. It's obviously a type of consciousness where the normal boundaries just don't apply. And we live a very bounded life amidst all kinds of perceptions which appear to be separative. But we're on our way in this particular curriculum to enter that which blocked us before, namely the illusory ring pass knot between things or between perceptions. The reality is other than that. So, you know, however we get there, it's worth getting there. Anything else, Lori?
Oh, no, that's all.
Thank you very much for your offering. Appreciate it. And that's great. Glad you put that in.
Antoinette adds,
yes,
the resonance with that which exists before existence.
I like the enigma, the apparent enigma. Of course, you know, the word X is in existence, and it suggests that which is thrown out of a state or separated from a state. And every universe is, in a way, because it is bounded by self-perception. A universe is bounded by the self-perception of that fragment of deity that self perceives, that the universe is a finite thing, especially when you compare the unbounded state from which it came, namely the absolutely infinite state. So is there that which exists before existence? Of course, everything is in your definitions. And we'd have to say yes, especially the way we usually consider existence as a bounded reality. Now, let's just say that absolute infinity exists or is before normal existence, before from it arises the normal existence of the universe and that which is apparently within the universe. And then, of course, when we deal with the absolute, it's ever so much more so. The absolute, sometimes Blavatsky says, is the one form of existence, but I would prefer the one formless form of being. I would prefer that when trying to describe the indescribable. So in any case, your definition here, your sentence, has about it a certain catchiness, you know, which reminds us of bounded existence and unbounded existence. At least it reminds me of that. So thanks, Antoinette. Do you have anything that you want to say in addition to that, or are you fine? I guess if I don't hear from you, I'll assume, okay, no, maybe you do. So you're self-muted, and if you unmute yourself and turn green instead of orange, there you go. Over to you.
Thank you, Michael. That really said it all. Thank you. You explained it very well. Very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Look, thank you all for your offerings. There's not so much about being right and wrong here, okay? It's not about that. It's about making an attempt to find what is hidden beneath the form of words, the actualities, can I call them realities? In a way I can. The realities hidden beneath the forms of words, and we do our best with that. And as I say, what might work for you may be just the thing for you, and something else will work with equal power for someone else. So basically, each one of us has to find the key, the open sesame, you know, the key to the lock that opens increasing degrees of reality to us. That's what we must find. And of course, we're not going to find it if we don't take it seriously. Like, hey, this is an important thing. Otherwise, we can satisfy ourselves like Moses, although I don't think he was satisfied, and never get to the promised land. There's an allegory there. See, Moses represented, in a way, the mind. And the promised land, although, you know, historically there was so much difficulty with it, the promised land represented so much more than just the mind. So the mind never entirely gets to the promised land. It's other abilities within us to touch, to apprehend, to recognize. Those are the things that get to the promised land, the Buddhi, the Atma, the monadic awareness, the logoic awareness. And there's always ever richer promised lands. Now, we want to be humble about this and not too ambitious, but we can all go further than we have. Further, farther, not sure which one to use, but we can all go farther than we have. Yep. Michael.
I would like to contribute that identification for me is like a sliding scale of states of consciousness. Where consciousness is focused at a particular point in space or time. And it relates not only to humans, but to lesser kingdoms of nature, as well as greater kingdoms of nature, all the way up to that universal whatever that is nameless.
Sliding scale. And I agree, you know, I can never think, Michael, the way some Buddhists seem to think, that the enlightenment of a Buddha is equivalent to the enlightenment of a planetary logos or a solar logos. You know, in other words, there are always deeper and deeper states on this sliding scale. But I think that for people like ourselves, we have to be somewhat satisfied with what can be achieved on the cosmic physical plane. You know, because the Christ himself has not really left the cosmic physical plane. We're not yet talking about these, what is identification in these strata. And look at them, each one of them, as complicated as the physical, cosmic physical. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yes. Working in the 18 subplanes, that's like nursery school. And then going into the cosmic ethers, that's kindergarten. And we feel so proud of ourselves in what we think we accomplish. I have a picture of my I have a picture of one of my young grandsons graduating from nursery school with a big cheesy grin on his face, and he is so proud. And that's us trying to rise out of the 18 subplanes, getting out of nursery school.
Yes, it's humbling, but it's better to be humbled than to be inflated by glamour, because then we just don't accomplish anything and we come crashing down. So let's go for as much of the reality as we can, even if it's humbling, may I say, even if it's humbling.
It has to be humbling, or we have to be humble in recognizing not only what we have achieved, but what is left for us.
Yes, it's well said. Michael, if you'll be so kind as to cut and paste what's in the chat box or get, you know, whatever, and then mail it to me, and maybe we can mail it to those who have attended this little session. Now, I'll tell you what, friends, I always have... my eyes are bigger than my stomach, you know, and I'm always thinking that we haven't even really knocked off identification, and we're not going to, because it is the ongoing word which is descriptive of this whole process. We have other basics to establish, and the main thing is that when you think you know a definition or something meaningful to you about some of these foundational concepts, it has to be real enough to sustain you beyond the level purely of words. Words are excellent and build the sort of a chalice in which all these things are held, but the reality is the liqueur in the chalice. You know, Manly Hall has a lot to say about that, and maybe if you're following Francis's webinars, he'll come to that, and you'll see what an amazing organ the brain is and what kinds of substances it does produce. So I have a feeling that that Tuya and Alexander are quite close now, and for myself, I'm just a little bit worn out because of the weeks and weeks of preparation and execution. So I'll just begin a little closing here. We'll come back to this. I'll begin a little closing by asking if there are any other questions or statements at this moment. And otherwise, we'll just have the briefest of closings and resume as much as possible next week. Now, don't forget, we've got things coming up. Tuya and I are not broadcasting ASK program until next week, but there is the pre-full moon on the night of the 9th. You know, Capricorn is such an important sign. So at 8 o'clock GMT, pre-full moon. And then Tuya has the, let's see, I think it's at, on the night of the 10th, the actual timing of the full moon is 19 hours and 21 minutes and 9 9 seconds. So I suspect it's going to begin at a broadcast at 6 o'clock GMT, and then when we reach 19, see, 6 o'clock is 18. When we reach 19, it'll be about 1 hour and 21 minutes later. So if you don't have your own full moon setup that you go to, you're most welcome at our usual live link from YouTube that we've been using forever whenever we have one of these broadcasts. So that's Friday night, and at least here in Europe. And then this is Tuesday night, right? This is Tuesday the 7th, 8th, 9th. So Thursday night, you'll have the pre-full moon, which is, you know, more of the astrological side of it, concentrating on that specifically. But I noticed that Tuya brings in a lot of things along those lines, which are things that I haven't even mentioned. So I'm sure you would benefit from both. All right. Is there anything further you would like to say or ask? Okay. And meanwhile, some other people have joined us, and I just want to say a welcome to you and thank you for being here on the list. Now, obviously, I've dealt with some foundational concepts. I just want to make sure that you have in your mind, consciousness, vocabulary, something that can represent these foundational ideas. So if you're concerned about what they might be, I'm going to do, if I can, yep. I'll put them in the chat box, and you can copy them from there. And there they are. And then if you want to think about these, I might just call upon any of these words, not necessarily in the order presented. But they do create a foundation in this very strange inquiry which we're undertaking, and one which is not much undertaken, and yet is very necessary. Okay, then, if not, have I missed anything, Michael? Is it okay? Looks okay.
I see no other questions or hands raised.
Okay, so we're in good shape there. And here's what we'll do. Coming back to Earth, as it were. This is a great word of power, and who knows how far it goes. We do know it involves hierarchy and Shambhala and so forth, but it involves much more than that. And maybe it's one of those invocations that has applicability at many different levels. So here we go. And pretty well mute yourself, but you can say it aloud with me where you are. Otherwise, you know what kind of sound we get in terms of overlapping sound. From the point of light within the mind of God, Let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Home. Friends, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., I think, GMT. Michael, I wonder if you can pull out the, is it possible to pull out the link for this Science of Triangles thing that we possibly go there? Anyway, Science of Triangles in the morning again. A slightly abbreviated program that probably, you know, isn't possible for everybody, given I'm sorry, it's an ongoing thing, but
my link has it going at 6 p.m. because it's 8 a.m. my time.
Really? Whoa. Ah, indeed. That would be a little better. Okay, so that's 8 o'clock. Our time here in Finland, and thank you for for looking, and maybe you can you possibly pull out the link, or maybe I can do it.
Yeah, I don't have the link to pass along to others.
Okay, I've got something. Well, I thought I did. Yes, I do. Okay, so that's going to now be put in your chat box. if you would like to join us, and if for any reason it becomes impossible, then we will let you know. But there it is in the chat box. So go to your chat box and you can copy everything out of there, and we'll be talking about the deeper aspects of triangles. And then again, next week we will resume the full ask program, and that will be after the full moon work has taken place.
And that will begin on Wednesday and not Sunday. Is that correct?
That's correct. It will begin on Wednesday, the 15th. Yep. Wednesday the 15th, pre-full moon, Thursday the 9th, actual full moon, Friday the 10th, and then Tuya will be offering her sacred pentagram along the way here. We'll try to let you know about that. And then the full ask program re-begins in the middle of the next week. And it'll probably be, what is it, Michael? Is it the morning schedule?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll straighten that out. Okay, friends, then thank you for being with us. And hopefully you got your link if you want it. We're grateful for your presence. Lots of love, many blessings from the whole team, and trying to bring you these webinars and broadcasts on as consistent a basis as we can manage. Okay. So, farewell for now. Bye-bye.